I'm going to alter my presentation a little. One, everyone's, I'm sure, quite tired from the Harinam and all the wonderful things that you did afterwards. I'm sure you had amazing experiences. But I also want to share a few things. I only have two presentations, I guess, with you. So I thought, instead of introducing really a new presentation, maybe an information overload, to try to connect some of the things that you've been hearing already from Devamrita Swami and Urmila, and perhaps especially to prepare you for the course or the discussion, an interactive workshop that Urmila will give tomorrow, focusing on careers. So I'm mainly going to ask you a few questions and take it from there. I want to start off first, and Chitty, maybe you can sit in a chair there so you'll be close to the board. First, just right on the board, religion and God on trial. We know what it means when someone has a court case, they're on trial, there's deliberations going on, sometimes there's problems. Religion and God on trial. Just write that down, right at the top. Religion and God on trial. You gotta write big so they can see. No one's gonna see it right in the back there, is it? Okay. Anyway, those who look closer can see. Now, this is our first question. Why, you know, many places in the world now, people are considering, questioning if there is a God, and particularly questioning the value of religion. Why do you think such questioning is going on in such an intense way now, perhaps more than ever in the last maybe 100 years or so? Religion, God being on trial. People questioning the value of religion and questioning the authenticity of God, or questioning, you know, the mercy of God. Just very brief. Yes. Terrorist activities? Yes. War? So much war? Yes. Social control?
Hypocrisy.
Fighting? Poverty? Okay, one or two more? Global imbalance? Global imbalances? Atheistic science? Okay, one more? Disaster? Okay. All right, let's stop there. Let's look at our list real quick here. Religion and God on trial. Terrorist, war, if you can't see, I'll call it off for you. Social control, hypocrisy, poverty, global imbalance, atheistic, that's okay, just leave it there, atheistic science. So you can see these, each of these things, and there's so many more we can list, is very impacting. Especially number one, and I'm glad that we have that in this category, is that some of the most greatest problems that's confronting the whole world is due to so-called religious involvement, religious convictions, sectarianism, fanaticism. If you look at one of the major problems facing the global community, it's fragmentation. Ethnic problems, racial problems, excessive gender problems, political problems, etc. Now, something that is supposed to really make life better for everyone, something that is supposed to really be solace and to be unifying, is running the risk of causing more fragmentation. Now, this is causing some people to question the value of religion, even question the value of God because of these other areas. If God is all good, if God is all fair and kind, why is there so much war, social control, hypocrisy, poverty, imbalance? Why is science seemingly, for many people, God, or proving many religious doctrines to be improper, especially those that are superficial? So, it's like the best and the worst of times, because this is what we were talking yesterday about, demonic influence. One of the greatest dangers is when religion or Dharma is hijacked. You have Upadharma, Chala Dharma, and so many other things. Because it takes healthy Dharma to be able to access Sanatana Dharma. It is very hard to embrace Sanatana Dharma if you're not clear what is Dharma. Another way of saying that, it becomes hard to enter into transcendence when one is too captured by the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion. There are many discussions, reports, where Prabhupada gives this emphasis. Once in a while, Prabhupada basically said it's a joke. You try to become transcendental and hop over the mode of goodness. Meaning that devotees do not work in goodness, but they work out of goodness. It is very hard to honor transcendence from the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. And so Bhagavad Gita explains how the mode of goodness is like a launching pad, which means it makes it more organic to be able to authentically embrace transcendence. And so we start off with religion and God on trial. Is that yes, as you are listening here, one of the major factors now is the terrorists, religious fanaticism. It's causing some people who even somewhat concerned about the world to think that if we could just throw all this religious stuff out, people would have less disturbance to be able to act in a way that's more comprehensive and integrative. And so, as we try to look at what you discussed earlier and what you're going to discuss tomorrow with careers, I want to go into this very briefly and put some reflections and maybe ask you some questions. So it becomes the best and worst of times, because it becomes the best of time because it becomes the time that if people can make religion relevant, everybody's religion is being scrutinized more. And so it becomes the time then for people to genuinely show that their theology improves on the quality of life, that it actually is able to withstand all kinds of assaults or challenges, and that it can make the world a better place. So anybody's fanaticism or anybody's activities that are not properly articulated, it becomes more complex in this day and time. And where our philosophy and theology, and most important, our actions substantiate the significance of our theology, it becomes the most wonderful time to show that religion does work and God is there when we genuinely are God conscious. Now, just flip this over. Now, next question. What if there is no God, no life after death? Here we are in Krishna consciousness. You say, Casey, we're following so many rules and regulations. And so much of what we do is based on the hereafter. But what if there is no God? What does that mean in relationship to the four principles that we follow? We are simply making extra endeavor because in Kali Yuga especially, it is most part more easier to be sinful for most people. And so trying to lead a religious, a spiritual life, or just have a transcendental life, means one has to really break away from the normative patterns. And so, obviously some sacrifices are being made. We're trying to follow these principles. So we are hearing again and again, no eating of meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. So just in relationship to these four principles, what if there is no God, no life after death? How would you reflect this? What you have? What if, yes, good. What if there's no God and no life after death? This is what comes to you. What impact is that would have on you in terms of if you were following these four rules and regulations with dedication? Would it mean that you just failed? It was a waste of time. It was ridiculous. Yes.
Materially, so there's still material benefits there. So,
still material benefits. Yes. Wasted austerity. Anyone else? There's no God, no life after death, and you follow these rules and regulations strictly. Yes. No reward. You have one more? Yes. Doesn't matter. Okay, let's look at this. Okay, yours also. Yes. Would prevent chaos. Okay, let's think about this for a minute. So here we have very emphatic things that we do in our lifestyle and trying to be good devotees. And what if in result there's no God, no life after death? Just consider this now. Still some material benefits, wasted austerity, no reward, nothing matters, principles would still prevent chaos. Let's just put a check here. That's still some of your benefit. Let's put a check at number one. Put for number five. Now, here, wasted austerity, no reward, nothing matters. It's ridiculous. Just for a moment. Just think in terms of, real quick, our diet. You can just write a book about the benefits of vegetarianism. Physically, emotionally, economically, socially, psychologically, etc. Better for the individual, for the family, for the nation. For dealing with some of the other things you mentioned earlier, poverty, resource efficiency, so many things. So, it is the most healthiest diet. In terms of gambling, anything that can be so addictive that it can literally make you a prisoner of it. You know, there are hospitals in different places in the world for you know, habituated gamblers. Something that can make you just become like an animal. And I have a nephew who was very successful, almost materially, but he had this habit. He just couldn't stay away from the racetrack. So he had this habituated, you know, idiotic tendency of just gambling. And it was so bad, he would be in his car, he would be crying, knowing he shouldn't go gamble, but he just couldn't control it. And he would just drive and gamble. So many things we can see destructive for gamblers. Where there's gambling, there is always intense gambling, heavy organized crime, there's prostitution, there's murder, there's so many different things. Illicit sex. We see now so many dangers in being promiscuous. We'll come back to that one later because there's a lot we can share about this. And of course, no intoxication. You said the other day the number one business in the world is the illicit drug business. So we have in the whole world of what? Number two business, number most prominent business in the world is defense. So basically a global community where people are intoxicating themselves while perfecting their ability of how to heal. And some of you are, you know, into accounting, but just basic logic. If you really want to know something about a person, just take notice of how they spend their money. They can say all kinds of things, but how they spend their money tells you a lot about their priorities. So here we're trying to drill and break out of a hellish world global structure where the construct is basically in massive people taking to intoxication, narcotizing themselves more, while being under structures that are perfecting the ability of how to heal. So, as we are looking and having this wonderful chance to be here for these days, the most important thing is that we come out of here with certain technologies of how to be better persons, how to be more devotional, how to be clear about our futures. What's most important is to have clarity about the wonderful process that we are associated with. And as I said, instead of giving you some of a new topic to overload you, we're just going to try to connect with Irmela and Devamrita has been sharing up until this point, and especially to prepare you for tomorrow's class that Irmela will give on careers. So, there was also discussion the last few days in terms of, and I mentioned it also, Krishna consciousness being the highest sense gratification. Then we ask ourselves, the Prabhupada once told us directly when I was working with Tatsu Maharaj and Hiranana Maharaj in the library parties, going to many universities. He told us, do not go into the universities preaching the Krishna consciousness rules and regulations. He said to preach that it is a higher philosophy. But we do understand ourselves that these rules, really, even if there was no God, even if there was no life after death, it is the best way to live to be a healthy, whole human entity. So we're not really bringing something that is so weird and so different. As a matter of fact, we realize that Krishna consciousness is everyone's inherent right and property, is what we are. We're trying to see what kind of acculturation we need to throw off. Something can be sometimes difficult and imposing. We have to create, we have to do something different. We have to find a way how to now bring something to us. But something that we already have, the process is about Atma Vidya, it's about civilization or rediscovering. So we're trying, in Krishna consciousness, to become natural again, to become normal. Because our natural status, the original sarup, is we are fully absorbed in the most animated, loving exchanges with tremendous adventure that never ends. We realize that in the spiritual body, that one sense can perform the activities of all other senses. In the physical body, we're limited, and even the senses, what they do, perceive or do, is very restricted. So here we're talking about an ultimate state where there is no old age, there's no death, that every day is a festival, that people are highly, always, in extreme states of the most euphoric intoxication. But we see more and more how material world is really such a perversion. Even just look at our existence as devotees. A couple of years ago in England, I was meeting with a group of Guru Kulis, and I asked them two questions. First question I asked, what did you like the most? What have you appreciated the most about being a Guru Kuli? Some of them were 30 now, some are, you know, two or three kids. And I kind of knew what they were going to say, but I wanted to hear it, to have confirmation. And about 90% of them, and maybe this is unique to their particular situation, but I doubt it. I think it's quite universal. for many of the recruiters. One of the things I mentioned, because many of them had gone to school now, coming to school and have professions. Some cases married once or twice, unfortunately, twice. But one of the things that was prominent, let's sort of connect, I say two. One, they found that their friendships with each other was, in many cases, much more binding than they found their commies had, or they had with their commie friends. Second, is that they were amazed how they're taken for granted the cosmopolitan and international experiences that they had been exposed to. That it was natural for them to be so much exposed to so many different races and groups. And in some cases, some of them had studied in Gurukula, had been to Gurukula in England, France, in India, America. And so, at such a young age, they had so many experiences in different parts of the world, had been with many different people, and had amazing understanding somewhat of, diversity with a sense of unity. Now, this is extremely important with the globalization of markets and the centralization of technology. Everything is becoming more and more compact in terms of people's awareness and centralization of things. What happens in one part of the world affects another part. Much of survival and progress materially and spiritually is being able to healthily honor diversity. Now, Srila Prabhupada was a powerful cultural ambassador. And he literally was giving us the best of the East and the best of the West. Now, I want to make a bold statement here. Let's flip this over. Most of you here are the most, how do I say this? I don't want to puff you up, nor do I want to put you in a state of depression. This can go one extreme or the other. Most of you here epitomizes the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And in many ways will determine its level of success. Prabhupada was so much merging the best of material culture to bring about ultimate spiritual culture. And so because he was on so much a mission, on a mission to transform the world, he was very eager and able to use Western technology, Western facilities, Western money, while trying to bring people out of a Western reductionistic way of thinking. Western materialistic reductionistic way of thinking. So like many of you here, you are a distinct merger of such. You are not British. You are not Indian. You are a combination. You do not think only in the mood of one who is born, raised, or trained in Bhat Varsha. Nor do you think fully like the typical Britisher. Now, this is extremely important and extremely complex, and is already unfolding in many of your lives in a complex way. For instance, now of course many devotees who join Prabhupada, in previous lifetimes they have been in India, they've done so many things, been yogis, rishis, perhaps even Lord Brahmans. Maybe that's why there's so much trouble in this association. Imagine, somebody in the last life, they were a Lord Brahman. In this lifetime, they're washing pots. So what do? They lord over the kitchen. Huh? So wherever they are, whatever they do, somehow they got to be. Raj, you got to be the controller. So imagine a group of Lord Brahmas together. Somebody was big yogi in Himalayan. In this lifetime, he or she has got us associating with so many other persons in communal environment, and so much of their previous consciousness that comes out from time to time is mainly wanting to be in isolation. So Krishna consciousness is quite dynamic in how it brings souls together from many, many different universes even to be able to participate in this wonderful activity that Mahaprabhu has in fact given us. So, for instance, in some cases it's very difficult for Western devotees because a kid born in the West is born in the West biologically and socially, but at the same time accepting a philosophy that is very anti-Western. While in most cases having parents who are not able to be so stabilized in some cases both environments. Not so stabilized in the Western culture, not so fully absorbed, especially in the Vaishnava culture, it can be quite overwhelming. In many of those cases, at least the birth that you've taken, there is a little more economic and social stability, which can allow you to be able to be a cultural ambassador in a very powerful way. To use the best, to honor that, while identifying and not identifying. Now there are conferences and there are books being written now on what is called the third cultural kids. And it's a phenomenon. It's a phenomenon that is applicable to missionary children, to multinational businessmen's kids, even to them sometimes, where people are biologically from one different orientation, but they're culturally or socially living in a different situation, and sometimes they are philosophically accepting something different from their social or their biological foundations. The beauty is that it allows them to integrate lots of diversity. The complexity is some days they wake up and they don't know who they are. The complexity is often they feel uncomfortable in all the various environments. And their comfort is greater with those like themselves of such. So many of us as adults and so many of the youth will experience such. And it can cause certain kinds of problems, but it also can bring in certain types of achievements. So as we look a little closer at this, backtrack a minute, at the four rules and regulations, and trying to honor these things, realizing that it's the best, even just living a natural life, we'll just say we're celebrating our spirituality. Now I want two volunteers for a minute. I'll tell you later what you're going to do. Someone's bold, who's ready to volunteer for anything. I need a man. I need a woman. Give me a man first. Come on, yes. He's bold, huh? They're pointing at you. They know that you are bold. You are fearless. You don't mind 200 people looking at you. Okay, now, I'm going to do something interesting, also showing something about power, strength that we get from following four rules and regulations, strength that we get from being spiritual, ethical, moral. And I want to show you also, very quick, how we lose power when we go against the principles. Or we go against our higher understanding of things. You still understand? So just stand here for me. Okay, let me have this. Okay. Now, what I want you to do, just close your eyes for a minute. And first, I want you to think of a time, only you know the instance of the event. I want you to think of a time, and I'll put it in two ways to make it easier for you. First, if you want, you can think of a time when you broke a principle. Okay? Alright? And, I mean, the case that was a little serious. And, you know, you knew what you should have been doing, but somehow, you just lost it. Get overwhelmed. Alright? And I want you just to go back, you know, just for a minute, just for 10 seconds, and just kind of revisit that event. You know, put yourself right back there as if you're right back in that situation. You know, just kind of reflect on the whole environment. You see it, you feel it, you smell it, whatever the situation was that you were part of, you feel in the whole atmosphere. Now, I want you to open your eyes just now, and you'll go back. I want you to hold your hand out like this, okay? And I'm going to put pressure on your hand. What I want you to do is try to keep it up. All right? I'm going to try to push it down. All right? I'm going to try to push it down, but I want you to just try your best to keep it steady. All right? Okay, now, well, while you do this, though, just close your eyes again. And I want you to think about that event when you lost it. You broke principles, and you really, you know, knew you shouldn't have done that, but somehow you just got overwhelmed. Okay, I want you to think about that, you know, as you resist, okay? So I want you to watch. Just experience that as if it's happening, you know, once again in your life, okay? So watch his hand. Okay, you're thinking like that as I try to push your hand down. Okay?
Now,
I'm going to show you something. Now, I want you to think about a time when you could have broken the principles, but you didn't fall prey. Alright? Opportunity was there. Challenge was there. Maya was very attractive and alluring, but you didn't give in. Alright? Now, I want you to, you know, revisit that event just as if it's happening over again. The challenge is there, but you did not fall prey. And I want to try to push your hand down again. And you don't want you to resist again. So, you could see the difference. That I was putting the same pressure when he was reflecting on when he did not maintain a sense of integrity spiritually, that there was a weakness. And when he came to the call of really honoring higher spirituality, there's great strength. So many things happen to us in so many, many ways when we deny our higher understanding, when we go against higher principles. So many things happen that it's amazing, physically, psychologically, and what to say to spiritually. So, we backtrack, we see that following these principles makes us a better person even physically. It's the best way to live. Even if there was no religion, even if there was no God, it's still the best. Religion being on trial, it's a wonderful chance for people to try to access greater sense of religiosity because there will be more observance, scrutinization. When we become a chump, we give in to all kinds of things. When we have no courage, we just give in. We lose so much of our strength, our existence. Sometimes in the workshops that I do on love, we explain how that when a person does not feel loved, a person is too fearful, when a person has too much anxiety, the person does not feel cared for or sufficiently valued. They are something like about 6 times more susceptible to premature death About 6 to 5 times most acceptable to chronic disease. 5 times most acceptable to any disease. Because the immune system gets affected, and so many things impact upon a person in a negative way. So it really, in also many, many ways, to be able to live a life with principles is so advantage, so much advantage in so many different ways. Now, we want to focus a little bit more on this sense of career and looking at our lives, looking closer at what we're doing, what it means now, what it can mean in the future. You've heard many times, hopefully, Bhaktivinoda mentions in his Shiksamrita about 4 things that are most necessary, imperative. And that's one of the Paramahamsa. 4 things are most imperative for the individual and the institution for success. And if these things are not together, there will be different degrees of failure. So this is Bhaktivinoda's 4 tenets here from the Shiksamrita. First, he emphasizes proper care of the body. We're not these bodies, but if we don't give proper care, we know how the body can really bring your consciousness down and can get you in a situation where you just have to be overly bodily concerned. Second, proper or healthy stimulation of the mind. And this is where it's important to be engaged, where there's enthusiasm. And very important that we try to engage you also based on your propensities. When someone can serve or do things based on their propensities, they feel better, they give more value to society, and the whole process of spirituality also becomes more exciting, adventurous, and even more sense of guarantee. If you're doing things just out of duty, you're doing something and your mind is not satisfied and you're just giving your legs and your hands and your arms, etc., after a while, it becomes hard to continue, and even while you're doing it, you'll not be able to offer high level of quality in most cases, because it's imposition, it's repression, rather than a chance to really to offer the best of what you can in Krishna. In one sense, surrender is not always much what we do, but it's based on what we're holding back. Because just like somebody can come to the temple here, and they can put, what's the currency here? Euros. Oh, euros. Everywhere, euros. Okay, so they can put 100 euros in the humbi. Somebody else comes, and they put 1. The person who gave 100 has millions. The person who gave 1 only has $10, $100 to the name. So in one sense, the person who gave the 1, it was a greater commitment. It was a greater involvement. It was greater surrender. Because they are holding back less. So Krishna is not so much watching what we do. And that's important. We can do all kinds of things in the wrong consciousness. We can do all kinds of things with a lack of proper understanding. The more we're understanding doing the right thing, then the more potency and blessings that there is. We want to do the right thing in the right way at the right time. We can do the right thing without doing it in the proper way. Or we can do the wrong thing, you know, with good intentions. So the more that we're in knowledge and doing the right thing, or the right activities, then the more that there is potency and reciprocation, you see, from such. So, we know the mind is engaged in sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting and rejecting. And it's so easy to go back into old patterns, or to accept the mundane moments of scheme of things, if we're not enthused, if we're not stimulated. 3, healthy socialization. We want good sadhu sangha, That is some the coming together of saintly persons to access truth. And we can, and we see many, many cases, that we can know something, but if the environment is not sufficiently supportive, then there is a problem being able to maintain it. That as human entities, we are not just living alone, we're all products of heredity, environmental factors, etc. And of course for study of the Shastra. So now we look at this, and this is for the individual, the family, the institution, for the world, that there's certain particular needs. And in psychology, sociology, they have something somewhat similar, is that there is a hierarchy of needs, physical needs, and goes down to all the way to from physical to self-actualization. And it's understood that a healthy person goes through these situations, and if one isn't established properly, it interferes with the other. If you're not having proper care of the body, and unless one is Paramahamsa, there's going to be a disturbance in one's spiritual life, in one's spiritual acceleration. Unless there is healthy stimulation of the mind, then the mind is later going to shut down on us in ways that even the body will not continue its performance. And if we do not feel valued, even though we may give address to the body, we may for a while have some stimulation of the mind, but the environment will later change that. If we're not feeling valued, then the mind will also will shift. And of course, none of this means anything if we don't have the boundaries and the understanding and the clarity of the Shastra, you know, to be able to guide us in such ways. When we often hear surrender, and let's go on this. What comes to you when you hear the word, the conception, surrender? Okay, surrender. First, giving up. Most languages, quite similar. Surrender, yes. Unconditional love. The word itself, surrender. Yes. Vulnerability. Making yourself vulnerable. War. Confinement. Okay. Anyone else? Surrender. Yes. Uncertainty? Okay. One more, yes. No free will. So now just look at this list other than number two. That usually surrender, just hearing it, usually connotates something negative. You've been imposed upon. Someone has conquered you. Someone has taken your free will. Someone has control of you now. And you're just waiting to get control of them. Uncertainty, no free will, confinement, war, vulnerability, etc. Giving up. So much in our psyche, this is what surrender often means to us. And so we try somehow to engage in the process of surrendering. With basic mindset, this is something unhealthy. Maybe giving away my free will, putting myself in a certain situation, being confined, limited, restricted, situation of violence, control, war, power is being subjected to me that somehow I can't defeat, vulnerable, giving up. But just as we see the value and the beauty of the four rules and regulations, as Krishna consciousness, the way to live in the most, to access the most natural state of things. That surrender, we can view it more in the mood of a little baby who is frightened, bewildered, and anxiety. And the little child just runs in Mata Pita's embrace and finds comfort, solace, and protection. So we are going through this process of samsara for many, many lifetimes, with all kinds of difficulties and challenges and fears and disappointments and attacks and abuses. And we want to run with all haste into such protection, loving embrace, etc. And not be confused about running from that which can give us the greatest protection. Let me share one story, and then I want to do one last interactive thing. Have you heard the story about, it's shared in different ways. There's once this dhobi, this man who was washing clothes, as his profession, interesting profession, and he felt a great sense of value. His socialization was with this donkey. So this donkey was so dear to him. And so he was doing so many things with the donkey. He was thinking of the donkey, feeding the donkey, walking with the donkey, embracing the donkey. So as what happened with all material things and all material bodies, you know, they meet devastation. So one day, the donkey died. And so this man was in so much remorse, so depressed, that his donkey had died. And he went through various rituals. He bathed, he shaved his head. So the minister to the king saw this man had shaved his head and understood that some important event had taken place. So he asked him what was the event, who was passed. And he went into this long diatribe about, yes, someone very dear to me, someone very great, someone who I'm missing so much. My life is never the same. Life will always be a difficulty for me without having association. My great friend Sunanda, he called this donkey a very special name, Sunanda Gandhava. Says Sunanda Gandhava has died. So the minister, he thought, well, this is an important event. Let me also go take bath, do oblations, shave head. And so he was also walking now around with a shaved head. And then the priest of the king was noticing that this dhobi, minister, have shaved their head. And so he inquired, so what is the occasion? And he said, well, we've heard that great person, Sunanda Gandhava, he's died. So he thought, oh yes, here we go, follow the norms. So he went, and he also shaved his head and took bath. Then the king noticed that such persons in his kingdom had shaven their head, and they were in mourning. So being a concerned king, he wanted to know what is the occasion so he can honor it, give proper concerns and respects. So he was informed by his priest that, yes, Your Excellency, a great person, subject in the kingdom, has died, Sunanda Gandhava. So the king, then he went, he shaved his head, took bath. So the queen noticing all these bald heads, shaved heads in mourning. So the queen, she wanted to know, what's going on? What is the occasion? And she explained, and the king explained to her, that one of the great subjects, Sunanda Gandhara, has passed. So the queen, she wants to know, who is this Sunanda Gandhara? Sometimes the lady folks, they want to know. They can spread the gospel even more. Yeah. Who is it? Give me all the details. So, they're better communicators, huh? So, then the queen, the king says, well, hold it, let me go ask the priest. And the priest explained, no problem. I'll bring back all the information. But wait a minute, let me go and ask the minister. And then the minister is confronted. We need to know more about Sunanda Gandhara. What did he do? What was the situation? How did he die? And so then the minister said, well, let me go and ask the dogi. And so the washerman, when he was approached, just hearing the name Sunanda Gandhara, he went into a tamagun ecstasy. Sunanda, he's gone. He's so dear to me. I'll never see him again. Life will never be the same. The minister says, yes, 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 yes. But we need to know more. Who is Sunanda Gandhara? And the devotee says, oh, Sunanda Gandhara. He has such a beautiful smile. He was so caring, always coming up near me, be with me. We ate together, we walked together, we did so many things together. Life will never be the same. The Jaya says, who is Sunanda Gandhara? He says, oh, Sunanda Gandhara, he was my ass. My donkey. So, just, of course, very simple story. But often, people play so much into the norms without thinking. What will this really produce? What is the essence of this? What is the benefit? And we do, and it's called gadalik, like the sheep, just following an innocent way without thinking one after the other. You must be very careful, especially in today's society, not to just be an ordinary sense gratifier who's living a life just somehow to try to get things that we're going to lose eventually anyway. We want to understand that we follow rules and regulations to ultimately throw them out. One does not have to chant 16 rounds in the spiritual world. One does not have to go to Arctic. Even these strict spiritual things are not done in the spiritual world. Now think about that for a moment. Then why do we put so much emphasis on them now? Just like when you're sick and you take extra rest, you take medicine, you do various things to help to restore you so you can now be able to function naturally. We're in a disease in a sick state. So therefore, we gloriously take to following these things so we can come to a point where we are an eternal party, eternal festival. And where every moment is more pleasurable than the previous moment. We're understanding more and more the goals of why we are engaging in commitment and austerity. Then it becomes more joyful, knowing what is ultimately available. Now this also is very important in our day-to-day exchange of our life. That as we pursue short-term goals, I understand this. It is quite ambiguous and difficult to acquire higher goals if you don't have short-term victories. If we are just perceiving and thinking to go back to the spiritual world, this is a very exalted goal, the goal we want. But that becomes more of a reality as we have short-term victories. Sometimes as devotees, we minimize short-term planning. in the idea that we leave it all up to Krishna. Make Krishna do the work. But as we have short-term strategy and goals, it helps to guarantee more of a consistent focus for the long-term goals. Victory produces victory. And as we focus the mind, this is also an amazing way of how we serve Krishna, worship Krishna, in our minds. We're offering our minds to Krishna in such ways. So I want to do a very short interactive reflection. You just turn to someone you can have as a partner. And I want you to do two things. First thing, and just take 30 seconds or a minute. I want you to just to talk to your partner. You go back 10 years in the past. Think about yourself 10 years ago. Some of you were quite young then. Not like us guys who are 50 plus. So, you go back and think of 10 years ago. And you just share with your partner in your own way. Just 10 years ago, what kind of things you were considering and doing as was a priority in your life at that time? You just reflect 10 years in the past. And just to visit that for a minute. And just share with someone who's next to you. And the person, and the other person shares with you. What was prominent, what was major priority in your life 10 years ago? Just do that for a minute, okay? Okay, just turn to a partner. Turn to someone and just share. You do on both sides. 10 years ago, stage. Time is up. Adibar. Okay, now last thing. I want you now to go into the future. I want you to dart 10 years into the future. Where you are now. 10 years into the future. Now I want you to reflect on what you feel and think that you will be doing. Your priorities will be 10 years from now. What do you see yourself doing? How can you perceive, you're trying to perceive yourself 10 years from now? What do you like? What do you think is likely that you'll be doing 10 years from now? Okay? You share that. Time is up. And we're running out of time for the class also. You haven't eaten. Now, you consider for the average person, this person is sleeping from maybe 6 to 8 hours. So 8 hours, perhaps. Person spends 6 to 8 hours of work, maybe 5, 6 hours you're working, sometimes an hour, half an hour up to work, or an hour up and back. So if you just take that, 8 hours sleeping, 6 to 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours working, that only leaves you about 8 hours left. That means that working is about 1/3. Careers that you pursue, lifestyle you're going to, going to be 1/3 of your waking, 1/3 of your life. So how important it is, what kind of work we do, that we feel a sense of value, a sense of wholeness, that it somehow allows us to honor our spirituality, helps us to feel and to be better persons. There's just millions and millions and tens of millions of people who hate their work, hate their jobs, hate their careers. They just can't wait to the weekend. Then the weekend's even more disappointing. They go back on Monday and then all anxiety. I thought I was going to have some good experiences of the weekend. Now they got to wait for the next weekend. So, since we don't want to just be ordinary persons, it is very important we really focus on how we're going to live our lives. It's important that we look at the past, because so much of what we are now is from the earlier past in this life as well as in other lifetimes. It's important that we realize that we have the choice. The choices that we make now will have a big effect on what the future will be. I want to give you a homework assignment that I want you to bring into the next class that I give. I want you to keep this thought on career in your future as you hear the classes that Irma is going to give, is it tomorrow, to look a little closer at what it really means and being a part of this wonderful mission Prabhupada has given us. Let us just, let me just summarize, so don't go very far, huh? I'll speak loud. Sunanda Gandhava, the wonderful donkey that impacted upon his master's mind, showing how people can just follow certain patterns because it's what's happening. We were talking the other day about the demonic influences. We want to be so careful not to play into more incarceration. We gave the example of what was called muscle test, where we could see that when we go against our higher understanding of things, that it weakens our constitution. We give away our power. We want to be more powerful. We do whatever we are going to do so we can be more effective and enjoy life on a higher level. Because as we are becoming more spiritual and reaching, coming closer to the goal, we become more excited. As we begin to do what? Krishna consciousness is never just a matter of shraddha. Faith is very important. But if faith doesn't gradually lead into realizations and experiences, then we will lose determination. We have a tremendous crisis in faith in our society, globally, worldwide. Faith is contagious, just like Maya is contagious. And so, when there's low faith, just like Maya has a contagious disease, then it spills over, and especially when someone has a weak immune system, they're more likely to be affected by it. When we are carriers of deeper faith, then we're also able to share that, or we're able for that to spill over. And so we have more and more people having low faith because they're associating the environment, or they're not understanding especially what they're doing. The mind is not sufficiently satisfied. They're going from one extreme to the other extreme in being so-called mission conscious, where it's practically impractical. They're not taking care of themselves, or not taking care of the immediate environment, or they are become so much captured now by economics and whatnot that there is just no time to for Krishna, or they fit Krishna in. When we do that, then of course Krishna responds according to our level of, our level of surrender. So your homework assignment, we'd like you, maybe write this on the board. Today Amla and myself were talking about the influences of karma. The karma is like so scientific that what we are now has so much to do with choices that we made and things that we did from the past. And what we will become is having so much to do with the things we're doing and the choices we're making at this time. And some of the choices have been very healthy, and some have been very unfortunate and will bring inauspiciousness. I want you to think about three people who've had the greatest impact on your life. I want you to meditate on this until we meet again, I guess, tomorrow or the next day. Think about three people. And when I say impact, this doesn't necessarily mean good. Three people who've had the greatest impact, or have played the greatest role in your life. Some of these cases are very wonderful. Some of these cases, people who have been the greatest problem for you. So just putting three people who've had greatest impact. Next, we get three categories of threes. I want you to reflect on three most significant choices that you've made. Look back at your life up to now. You think about three of the most significant choices, most important choices that you've made. And last, I want you to reflect on three most significant events, three most significant occurrences. You just try in your own way to think of three people in your life who you felt have been the three people who've had the greatest impact on your life. Three, you feel, the most significant choices that you've made up to now. And then three most significant events. In all of these cases, it may be positive or it may also be very negative. But it was very distinct, very prominent in your life. Because we are so much the product of this here. So much of the way of how we perceive, codify, how we relate to things has so much to do with impacting persons, choices, and events. And so in some cases, we want to celebrate some of these persons, choices, and events with great gratitude and appreciation that it has brought us and made us what we have that we are proud about. And in some cases, we need to look closer at these three persons, choices, and events to see how to become freed from their influences that can live on with us. But even the lifetime, so to say, of this particular life. If we don't take more inventory in our life, if we don't agitate our minds, trying to see better how to appear and how to serve, then Maya will do it for us. We are a very personal movement. And preaching involves strategy. Growing, accelerating our spiritual life involves strategy. And as we put forth the effort and take advantage of what is given, then we're able to have much more of an auspicious existence, and we begin to move off the platform of faith. We want to be able to read the books, and the books become windows to the spiritual world. We want to, as we hear stories, we want to be able to identify because of what is happening in our own life. Prabhupada and the great acharyas did not just come into this world to perform, so we could just talk about them, about what they did. It's happening a lot in Christianity when you talk about Jesus. But they gave us a teaching of how to become like them, how to be able to enter into the spiritual world, and not when we die only. That this is not just a process of faith or just another religion. We're saying even if that was the case, that we don't experience it until we die, so the things we do is the best. But this is the process where we are supposed to come to a point that even while we're in these bodies, we're supposed to be in contact with the spiritual realm. We're in a process that by following this process, we begin to connect with what we are chanting. We're chanting Krishna's, his name, his number is not different than him. His rupa, his guna, his leader. That these great devotees we said yesterday, Madhavapuri, Rupa Goswami, they're not gone. They're in the natural state. And they're trying to help us to become natural. It is natural that someone who loves you wants to communicate and associate with you. So naturally, do you want to associate with them? So we transform the kama, the lust, into love, then all that is natural is just gushing out, radiating for us. Until we have greater carriers of higher bhakti, there's always going to be much more confusion and a tendency to engage much more in the bhoga tyaga. Because we are pleasure seekers. Ruchi must be there. If we don't find it in the spiritual associations, we don't find it in spiritual communities, we don't find it in the spiritual practices, inevitably we will start taking more shelter of the lower, and then we give our power away, we take another physical body, lifetime after lifetime. So let's just remind ourselves, what we're doing is the most natural, we're not trying to become something that we're not, we're just trying to reinstate ourselves, realize that it's the best thing, even if we just lead a normal, so-called material social life. And then to focus on the fact that what choices and things we do now is determining what we're going to experience in the future. We all have that amount of power in such a way. Now, I think because it's so late now, I don't know, should I take two questions or should I just stop? What should I do? I better stop? Okay. Otherwise, what will happen to me tomorrow will be dangerous because of your anxiety that you're experiencing now, right? You're hungry. Okay, so keep those homework assignments in mind, and when we meet again, we will touch upon that. Thinking of your 10 years in the future, bring that as you hear the classes Amala is going to give you. See tomorrow. ISKCON found the child, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ji, Vaishnava Gaur Ji.